CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be. Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Tomas, what's your call of the day?
I'm going to play a little Nostradamus here. I'm going to say that we're going to have another positive net inflow today for the Bitcoin ETFs.
Happy Monday. It's May 6th, 2024, and this is Markets Daily, a show where we get into the minds of some of the smartest and most experienced investors, traders, analysts, researchers, CEOs, and anyone with a smart or hot take. I'm Jen Sinassi. Before we get into our discussion today, let's take a look at what's going on in the markets. Now, Bitcoin has erased last week's losses. Prices are up across the board. Of course, we saw Bitcoin make a recovery on Friday as we got cooler than expected U.S. April jobs data, erasing concerns about higher interest rates. Following that report, market participants saw a 68% odd for at least one rate cut by September. That's according to CME FedWatch data. If we take a look at prices now, Bitcoin is just under $64,000 and Ether is up over $3,100 as of 8 a.m. Eastern time. And the CoinDesk 20 index is up almost 1.5%. And on the ETF front, I have to say a big milestone for Grayscale. They saw their first daily inflow after bleeding billions of assets. All right, let's make sense of what's going on in the markets this morning with Kraken Head of Strategy, Tomas Profumo. Tomas, welcome back to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Of course, thanks for being here. Now, since you've been here, we do this fun thing where I ask you your call of the day. So let's just kick it off. Tomas, what's your call of the day?
I'm going to play a little Nostradamus here. I'm going to say that we're going to have another positive net inflow today for the Bitcoin ETFs.
Okay, I love that. And tell me a little bit more about why you think it's going to be another positive day for the ETFs. The inflows have been kind of slow lately.
Yeah, so we've definitely seen demand for the ETFs slow down a little bit. But first and foremost, they're wildly successful still. So we're still at around $11.5 billion of total net inflows over the last 3.5-4 months since the ETF launched. And I like to compare this against the Spider Gold Trust, GLD, which was the most popular ETF product at the time for commodity. And that took over 3 years to get to that kind of level. So U.S. Bitcoin ETFs are still smashing those kinds of records. And even then, the peak ETF AUM, when it comes to net inflows, was about $12.5 billion. So we're only down about 8% from that peak level. So I like to contextualize this as kind of like a minor move when you think about just Bitcoin prices in general. It's a volatile asset at the end of the day. But when it comes to the short-term net flows, whether it's inflows or outflows, a lot of it is dictated by price action. And so with the price lifting, of course, you're going to have a lot of demand today for the Bitcoin ETF, given the fact that they have to chase the market closes on Friday versus Bitcoin being open 24/7, 365. And so I think you have the price level impact, and then you also have the broader US equity indices, for example, that are up on the day, at least pre-market. And so I think that also plays a role.
I said at the beginning of the show, Bitcoin erased losses. We saw some traction over the weekend. What do you think is driving we've actually been seeing a lot of action over the weekends, over the past few months in European trading hours as well. What do you think is driving that?
You know, it's hard to say with Bitcoin because, again, the market consolidates and it ramps up, and there's not always a clear catalyst for it. I think from my perspective, when you think about the ETFs, because they've been such a powerful narrative, when it comes to the actual flows themselves, they occur mostly during the weekdays, right? They're not active on the weekends, given the fact that the markets are closed in the equity markets here in the US, for example. And so that might be one factor at play here. But also, let's contextualize this a little bit as well. So when I've looked at prior halvings, for example, or cycles, usually the price as of the halving date or within 30 days, the low of that price represents the low of the entire four-year cycle, which is pretty interesting. And so if you believe that to be the case here, we've only had a drawdown of roughly 9% from the price on the halving date down to the lows that we saw last week, and we're already rebounding back up. And even then, the volatility on Bitcoin is in the low 50% right now on an annualized basis. And that's quite low compared to historical standards when it comes to a lot of price action. So there isn't much signal to say that anything is like a massive departure from what we've seen in the past with Bitcoin.
Where do you think the price of Bitcoin is heading?
Oh, man, I can't give price predictions. But as I said in the past, global adoption of crypto is still in that kind of early adopter phase. I think it goes a heck of a lot higher. And so corresponding with that kind of adoption trend, you do see a lot of demand. And that's the direction I see it going as well.
I will always ask for a price prediction. I don't always get them, but I just got to ask. Okay, I have to ask you another thing. On the topic of ETFs, we saw Hong Kong launch ETFs over on that side of the world. I know CF Benchmarks, which is a Kraken company, predicts that $1 billion in assets under management will be in the Hong Kong ETFs by the end of the year. Why do you think they've had a seemingly slow start?
The Hong Kong ETF versus the US Bitcoin ETF when it comes to like AUM, it's just really a market size question at that point. When you think about the US equity market, it's massive compared to most other countries, and particularly Hong Kong, which is a much smaller population. So definitely not unexpected to see big differences between what US equity markets show when it comes to ETFs and then any country abroad. Both in terms of size and style. You know, the ETFs, for example, are a very popular and well-understood product in the US, maybe not so much abroad.
All right. The summer months have been historically kind of boring, right? There have been lower investor returns, especially in crypto markets. What do you think is going to happen this summer? Do you think it's going to be similar to the summers of the past, June to September, going to be boring? Everyone's going to be on vacation, not paying attention to the markets.
Yeah, I mean, this usually happens in equity markets too. Everyone calls it a sell in May and go away. And so I think with crypto, it might be a little bit different, only in the sense that you have some catalysts coming up that I think are, let's call it on the time horizon of the next 3-6 months. And so you do catch some of the summer here. Of course, the ETF for Ethereum and the decision around that is coming up in just about 2.5-3 weeks. And so that's going to be an important one as well. And any follow-on action or activity with respect to that, which I think may extend into the summer, of course, whether it's approved or denied. And then beyond that, you know, you still have kind of the what I call like the dark horse when it comes to a lot of the venture investments that were made 3-4 years ago coming to fruition. These things typically mature over 3-4 year cycles. And so to the extent that we see any kind of real pickup in adoption or trends with those new applications, that might prove interesting. And I've heard a lot of rumblings, for example, in GameFi, which received a ton of funding in the last cycle. And so perhaps we see some kind of a mystery event that we weren't expecting, much like DeFi Summer several years ago.
You're not the first to bring up the GameFi theory on this show, so I want to come back to it in just a second. But let's go to the ETH ETFs now. Do you think we're going to see an approval in May?
It's really hard for me to say. We haven't seen as much detailed scoops or press coverage with respect to the Ethereum ETF like we did with the Bitcoin ETF in the fourth quarter of last year. I will say that some analysis I've done on the Grayscale Ethereum Trust, ETHE, given the discount to net asset value on that one, I think the market's pricing closer to a 25% odds that it gets approved in 3 weeks. Of course, if you think of it, you know, if you believe that it's going to get denied, the eventuality of it getting approved, I actually think is much higher. I think the market's pricing above 50%. Given today's price on ETH, when the Grayscale Ethereum Trust. And so we'll have to see. I think the important thing here is that the market's already seemingly pricing in expectations that it might not happen, or it's less likely to happen. But from my perspective, there's not much difference between Ethereum and Bitcoin outside of the fact that you can stake Ethereum. And so from a technicality standpoint, I don't see why. I would be very curious to see what the rationale is for blocking an Ethereum ETF in particular.
There have been a lot of reports that the SEC is possibly looking at Ether as a security. Do you think that that could introduce some complexity to this and we may not see an approval in May because of that?
That's a little bit out of the realm of my expertise. I think this is also a reflection of some of the ongoing uncertainty when it comes to the regulatory side. So, of course, you already have the CME, for example, that's been trading Ethereum futures for several years now, and they treat Ethereum as a commodity. And so it's really difficult for me to lay down any kind of wisdom on this topic, unfortunately.
I think that was a great point to bring up, that Ether is already being considered a commodity in different aspects. And so you did lay down some wisdom. Don't worry about that. And I want to get to GameFi now before we wrap up this conversation. Any particular GameFi projects you're watching?
Nothing in particular, actually. It's something that I haven't really explored too much lately. It's something that I'm actually trying to dip my toes in. I've been more interested in like the DeFi side and some trying out really some of the DEXs that have been more notorious nowadays, like, for example, Jupiter on Solana and whatnot. So I'm still yet to really get deep on the GameFi side. But again, when I go to dinners and meetings with others in the industry, it's typically a topic that comes up almost every time.
Now, besides ETFs, what are you watching? I mean, maybe let's venture into the DeFi space. You said you've been watching DeFi very closely. Any particular project that you want to highlight or anything really interesting that's going on that you think investors, traders, people who are interested in the market should know about?
I can't highlight any particular project, but I will say I think what's been interesting in this cycle is just seeing the explosion of activity on DEXs in general. We're seeing like a lot of pickup. I think a lot of that has to do with scalability solutions that have come up, whether it's L2s or even really testing the limits of an L1 like Solana, for example, where people can really cheaply transact either on a DEX or even the creation of a new project. So that's been really interesting to see as a trend overall. And in general, DeFi, you know, total value locked has been keeping up pretty well. If you look at it on a trend over the last several years, it's been doing pretty well itself. And then, of course, stablecoins provides another area of interest when it comes to DeFi, and you're seeing some experimentation there, like, for example, creating a stablecoin that's basis trading futures effectively. So I'd say that there's on the margin like pretty interesting innovations happening, and quite a bit of it from my side is interest in how changes in the layer one, layer two infrastructure is shaping or paving the way for new ways to express DeFi in a way that's cheaper and more accessible to people.
Tomas, thanks so much for joining the show.
Thank you.